you have to be offering something that you can actually fulfill as well. There's no point saying you are this word if in fact you are absolutely not that word. Actually have to back up your marketing with the goods, the promise, and so on.
And it's got to be a word as well that means something to your client. You know, you can't just invent a word, you know, Zaffensnuffenburger, and go, well, that's our word, because it doesn't mean anything.
I'll trademark that one. We are the Zaffensnuffenburger.
Ladies and gentlemen, the next event on the card is a heavyweight marketing bout for the small to medium business owner. In the red corner, from Paradise, Australia, is David. And in the blue corner, from an English paradise, is David.
Hello and welcome to this week's episode of David vs. David, the podcast for the small and medium business entrepreneur, where we look at the various topics and issues facing you in your business, your working week, and how to tackle issues around marketing and advertising and so on to take your business one step further along the road to success. My name's David Pritchard here in the UK, and down in sunny Hobart, Tasmania in Australia is my co-host David Council. Hello, David.
G'day, mate. Welcome back to another week of marketing.
Absolutely, indeed.
We're trying not to talk about weather at the moment because you're coming into winter and we're coming into summer. So
I'm becoming all gloomy.
Yeah, and I'm just starting to feel pretty good about everything again.
So that's the weather over.
Absolutely. And more importantly, it's almost cricket time. So for those of you who aren't cricket tragics like I am, suck it up, princess. It's getting to the really good time of the year. We've got the 2020 World Cup. Is it the 2020 World Cup? No, it's the One Day Cup that's on here in Australia. So looking forward to that.
Yeah.
Of all of the teams that are playing here in Tasmania, we've got bloody Scotland coming here. I thought we were going to get an independent nation coming to play, but apparently not.
No, you're still part of the good old UK, mate. So,
yeah, absolutely.
But no, it's, are we down to whoop you at any point in this this coming season?
Oh, I think all things being equal, we should meet in the final, shouldn't we?
I'm not sure, actually. Yeah, probably. But
mind you, that's if your cricket team stops, you know, stabbing each other in the back at the moment. Gee whiz.
Yeah. There's some controversial stuff coming out. Yeah, so various people have got their books coming out this week and being promoted and all in the bookshops this week. So, anybody who's a cricket fan, I think we're talking about Kevin Peterson's book and so on that's coming out this week. And as you say, lots of commentary going around on what might be in all that.
Just in time for Christmas.
Absolutely, indeed. And, that's obviously going to be a Christmas stocking filler for everybody and part of marketing, isn't it? Get your book out at the right time. Timing, a major facet of marketing. And we've discussed timing, I think, in a previous episode, regards things like Valentine's Day and florists and all this sort of stuff. But we were having a little chat before this episode, just before we started recording, and discussing some of the things that we've both looked at in the past. And, you know, I'm sure any good business owner would have on his bookshelf somewhere at home a one or more, hopefully a number of marketing books, business books and so on. It's, I'm sure everybody wants to read things on how to improve their business and stuff. And one that we were just discussing was a book from, 10 years ago maybe?
Oh, no, more.
Maybe I'm looking at the reprint. But anyway, it was The 22 Immutable Laws of Marketing by Al Riis and Jack Trout. Good book, and recommend you you search that one out on Amazon and have a look for it. But as you can tell from that, we are going to be having a chat about one or two of those laws. The chances of us getting through 22 laws in any depth whatsoever is next to zero on our past experience of, we set out sometimes with 7 or 8 Q&A type questions, and we normally get through 3 if we're lucky. So, David, 22 Immutable Laws of Marketing. What's your first, foremost, and favourite one?
Well, actually, just before we get to that, this is really important because it is one of those things that even a small business person should really understand these. There's a lot when it comes to marketing that gets taught at university that operates at a massively higher level. And some of it, quite frankly, that gets taught at university, I don't know, actually really exists. I think that it exists at the university level. But once you get out into the real world and, you know, you get the wash of the real world going over it, some of it gets a bit watered down and different. And, you know, some of the matrices that they teach you about, yeah, they're all there. Look, they're really interesting. And I'm sure if you're operating top level marketing, they are important. But for the small business and medium business person, yeah, maybe not so much. But these 22 are something that you really should try and get your brain around and understand, because if you can do that, it will make a difference to the way you approach marketing and the success that you get from marketing as well.
That's a fair comment. I think what you were saying, you know, some of the textbook stuff, and you know, I've done, good grief, I've even done an MBA in marketing and stuff in the past, 15 years ago, and I think you're right. In a lot of instances, you know, when you've got the resource of a big company and you're fighting different fires, you know, looking to advance on different fronts and so on, that's when some of that stuff really maybe gives you the edge. But certainly, you know, the intended audience of this podcast, it's a different set of fires, different set of scenarios. And yeah, you're looking at different things here. So that's where we can look at with these.
All right. Well, oddly enough, I'm going to actually start with law number one. We might not touch all of these as we go through, but yeah, law number one is really important. And that's the law of leadership. It's better to actually be first in the market than it is to have a better product. Now, there are always exceptions to these rules. I like to think that Apple is actually an exception to these rules, because quite frankly, you know, they weren't the first MP3, you know, device. You know, they weren't the first in a lot of these things that exist in their phone, but they are the best at it. However, for the most part, being first is better than just having a better product. And here's a real world example, and we talk about this one all of the time. If you're creating a website for your business, don't wait until that website is perfect before you put it out. Get it out and then work on it once that it is out. And the same holds true with advertising and marketing things in your business. It's better to get to that market first, get that message out there and let people know why you're going to solve their problems, than it is to let your competitors get the jump on you and then start messing around with saying, oh yes, but we do that better because, and you know, because then you're having to justify a whole heap of things. You've become me too. And as soon as you're in that me too seat, you're like the annoying 5-year-old kid brother when you're 7. You know, you say blah, 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 and the kid brother says, oh, me too. So unless you want to be, you know, following around all of your competitors, get yourself into the marketplace first. And that doesn't mean that your product has to be first. It just means that the interpretation of your product, for example, has to be the first one out there. So, you know, you've heard us talk many times about how you can define your product, frame the market. Well, frame the market, be the first to frame it, let everybody else be judged by your standard.
Yeah, this is a good point. There's a caveat on that, on this though, I think.
Yep.
You're absolutely right. If you can set the agenda and set the layout for the product, you know, as you say, perception in people's minds, you can, as we say in sales, widen the gap. So you're focusing on the things that are important to your product or your intended product, and making sure that, you know, it's really hard for somebody else to get in there and catch up with you. You know, you're trying to establish barriers to entry to slow anybody else catching up with you. Your product itself or your idea should still be one that people want. You know, there's no point being first to the market with a product that nobody wants. You've still got to do your research. There's no point having I've got a great idea for a product and being first to market with that, because yeah, you'll be first in a very, very small market. But you know, what you've said, you know, you're cracking an example there with your website. There's no point trying to come along behind and trying to catch up because you're waiting for it to be perfect. If it's 80% good enough, and you can start using it to get your message out there and start establishing yourself as the first in the market, in that particular market, then fabulous. There's no point delaying and delaying and delaying until you are playing catch up because somebody else is there in front of you. You do have to be operating in a market that does exist.
Absolutely. Do not just, you know, blindly put products out there because you believe in them. You know, you've still got to do some market research and know that there's a market for them. I spoke to someone only this week who had a product that they'd put into the market, and they didn't know whether there was a market for it.
Yeah.
So they'd really, you know, started the wrong way around. And they're not the only people that I've spoken to that have got that problem. You know, it is one that sometimes people do rush a little bit too fast. You know, the assumption with the law of leadership is there is actually a market in place. Uh-huh. You know what? That actually leads to law number two, because what you're saying sort of covers over a bit of that, and that's the law of category. For example, the first person to fly from America to the continent, so to France, we all know Charles Lindbergh. Everyone knows who the first person was. but probably don't remember who the second person was. And they certainly would really struggle if you said, name the three people that flew before Charles Lindbergh and crashed. however, what law of category is about is saying, well, if you can't be the first in that category, then redefine the category.
Yeah.
So could you be the first woman to fly from, assuming, well, Charles Lindbergh was a man, but, you know, could you be the first woman to fly across the Atlantic? Could you be the first woman to land on the moon, for that matter? You know, it's a new category. It's a new position in people's brains. It's what I like to term the Guinness Book of Records law.
Absolutely. And in fact, Charles Lindbergh was not the first person to fly across the Atlantic, but he was the first solo person to fly across the Atlantic.
There you go.
Because before that, it was Alcock and Brown who did it together.
See, there you go. It's a different category.
So there you go. And Alcock and Brown are fairly well known if you're into that kind of thing, but Charles Lindbergh is much more well known. So
yes, absolutely. You know, I read a really good book that dealt with that, written by Bill Bryson just recently. Anyway, I'm not here to promote Bill Bryson's product. He's doing okay. But if you're looking for a really good book, go and have a look. It's a fabulous book. Yes, so create that new category in people's brains. If you decided that there was a gap in the market for people who sold cola, would you go after Coca-Cola, you know, as because they're the dominant player, they're the ones who own the market share, or would you create a secondary category, for example, light colas or cherry colas or vanilla colas? Any of these ringing a bell? Because they're all categories where people have established a new category to try and get position in that market. As it stands now, most of them that I've just named, Coca-Cola is the dominant player.
Yeah, indeed.
But I think the cherry cola market, though, is dominated by Dr. Pepper.
I think you're right. And you also, in alcoholic beverages, for example, you know, there are a multitude of whiskies, a multitude of gins and wines and so on. And, you know, I might be wrong on this, but, for example, the wine industry years ago used to be dominated by European growers. It was all down to the vineyard and the soil and the age of this, that and the other, you know. And you were trying to, for the consumer that was trying to buy a wine, it was a bit of a minefield, really. And there's a bit of snob value around it, perhaps, as well as to picking out the best wines and stuff. But then New World growers came along, and there's still a little bit on the area involved, but I may be treading on wrong ground here, but predominantly established the grape variety as the factor. And, you know, it's pretty rare now that people go into a restaurant, whatever, perhaps, and say, oh, I'll have a Chateau. Have you got a Chateau de whatever? They're more often than not, they'll ask for, do you have a Shiraz or do you have a Cabernet Sauvignon? Because they know that's the predominant thing that they like. So, you know, New World growers, how can we compete against these established growers? You know, we'll focus on the grape itself. That certainly is what seems to be to me. I may be wrong, but it certainly seems to be the case.
Well, the French actually forced that line because they said, well, you know, there is only one Bordeaux and there is only one Champagne and it's in France. So if you're making sparkling wine and, you know, you're in Australia, then you can't call your wine Champagne because it's not Champagne, it's sparkling wine. And while that would appear to be a negative, what they actually did was enforced the law of category for every other New World wine grower to say, exactly as David said, we're going to focus on the grapes. We're going to create categories of grapes all of our own. Mm-hmm. And that's how we will market them, because then the snooty French won't be able to say, oh, we've got one of them too, you know.
On behalf of our French listeners, I apologise on behalf of my Australian co-host. Sorry about that, guys.
We might be a bit precious, I think, here in Australia about the quality of our wine. So, after years of Monty Python referring to it as, you know, cat's piss. And it's very nice.
It is very nice, anyway. And as is lots of French wine.
Oh, don't get me wrong. A bit partial to some of those French wines as well.
Absolutely.
And you know what, the third, and this is a really quick one, third law that goes with all of those is law of mind. And that's where you've got to say it's important to be the first in the mind of the consumer. So you've got to be that, you probably heard of it before, it's top of mind. So when someone thinks about hamburgers, for example, McDonald's tries to be top of mind. They really work on law of mind, because the buying cycle, I believe, of a McDonald's burger is about 10 seconds. It works along the lines of, I'm hungry. What'll I do for lunch? I think I'll have McDonald's. And if they've managed to embed that in people's brains, then poor old Hungry Jack's or Burger King or, you know, whoever else, Wendy's or, you know, whoever, they don't get a look in, because they owned that part of people's mind that just says, if you're after a burger, buy McDonald's.
Yeah, indeed. And, you know, quite often you can only, being top of mind there, is because there's the certain words that they will focus on the ownership of those words, if you like, in the prospect's mind. So you may, I don't know, take a product. Well, you've just given one there, actually, McDonald's, obviously. You know, they obviously focus on being top of somebody's mind for the word hamburger.
What you've actually just done is refer to the law of exclusivity, which is law number 6. Because that word is really critical. And in fact, the example is exactly that. Because if you think back, Burger King, or Hungry Jack's here in this country, tried to own the word fast, you know, in terms of fast food. Unfortunately, they were behind the times. McDonald's had already grabbed that in people's brains. And if you think as well about courier deliveries, FedEx tried to take over the word worldwide from DHL. Couldn't do it. Because those words were so heavily associated with those other brands. And that's where you've really got to use that whole law of exclusivity to own those words. Sorry, I realise I'm jumping ahead, but you know that's exactly where you were going to.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, it's a hard thing to do though, isn't it? You know, we're talking about that law. What can you do to help achieve that?
Well, you know, I think you've got to define what it is that you're selling to your customers. You know, what is that service or what is that product that you're actually servicing your clients by selling to them, and try and pick a word that no one else is using that can become the word that is associated with that product. And you know what? You can do it in a local market. This is not something that you've got to do as a global, you know, strategy. You've just got to say, if you live in, I don't know, Cirencester in England, and you're the local milkman, then you've got to find a word that allows you to associate deliveries from you and milk together so that there is no separation in their brain. If they think milk, they think you.
So you could go for the freshest or whatever, or, you know, pick up on something that you can genuinely offer. Again, you have to go back to something here that, you know, you have to be offering something that you can actually fulfill as well. There's no point saying you are this word if, in fact, you are absolutely not that word. You actually have to back up your marketing with the goods, the promise, and so on.
And it's got to be a word as well that means something to your client. You know, you can't just invent a word, you know, Zaffensnuffenburger, and go, well, that's our word, because it doesn't mean anything.
I'll trademark that one. We are the Zaffensnuffenburger.
If you're the local milko and people want cold milk for their cereal for their breakfast, and, you know, you've done the research, you know that's the case, then maybe breakfast ready is the type of milk that you deliver.
Yeah.
You know, it's chilled, it's ready to go, it's on your doorstep, it's breakfast ready. But you've got to find out where the customers are with it. Otherwise, as I said, you're inventing a word. Snurfenburger. You know, my milk is Snurfenburger. What? Yeah.
I'm waiting for the PDF translation of this episode. See how that gets spelt. Or the timeline for it. Let's see what they come up with. Right then, okay. Laws of exclusivity, yeah, we've done that. Law of the ladder. This is a nice one. This is a very nice one because often, of course, you might not be first to market. You might not be number one in the market. There may be a leader in the market already. You may be trying very hard to take a decent slice of a very large pie. That, you know, you'd be happy being number two if you weren't number three or four. You know, so law of the ladder, moving up the ladder.
Because sometimes it can be really expensive to be the number one player. You know, a lot of money is involved in holding yourself in the number one spot.
Absolutely.
So you can be the number two spot. You know, for those of us who are tragically old, Avis is the worldwide gold star example of this. Avis Car Rental, their positioning statement used to be, we try harder. So they were the number two. They used to say in their ads, we are not the number one car rental company. We are the number two car rental company. And you should rent your car from us because we try harder.
Yeah.
And boy, was that a successful campaign for them.
That's right. We have to try harder because we're not first and we're not resting on our laurels, I suppose, is what they were really pointing out there.
Mm.
They were hungrier for your business than the other guys. So, and yeah, famous example, and it worked very, very well indeed.
You know, there's a complementary law that goes with this, and that's the law of opposite, which is, if you're keeping track, it's law number 9. So if you're actually shooting to be second place, your strategy is actually determined by the person that is at the top of the ladder. You know, so once again, please don't take this the wrong way, the people at Pepsi, but Pepsi is the number two cola in the world. Coca-Cola is the number one cola in the world. So if you remember when Michael Jackson was doing the publicity for Pepsi, they marketed themselves as the choice for the new generation. So they went, you know what, all of those people that are already drinking Coke, doesn't matter what we do, we can't get them back. They like Coke. We could be 100 times better than Coke and we still wouldn't get them back. So what we're going to do is we're just going to get that segment of the market that we can go and get. And as they get older, we will own them all the way through.
And the old market diminishes. So it's again, I mean, Pepsi is, it's a large organization there, you know, they've still got the money to throw at this. But, you know, in the market they operate in, it's an expensive operation to go in. So, you know, it's the principle here involved is going after a segment of the market that you can afford to go after. They could afford to go after that generation and market to them and reap the rewards over several years, you know, probably decades, in fact. Do you reckon it's, I mean, they were famous as well for the Pepsi Taste Challenge as well, weren't they? How do you think it compared to that one?
Yeah, I actually thought it was a better campaign because at the end of the day, all of these people were trying Pepsi and they were picking Pepsi, you know, over Coke. They would go, oh, yes, this is the true and genuine cola. And they go, well, this is Pepsi. It's like, oh, isn't that interesting? Didn't make any difference. People would go, yes, you know what? As colas go, Pepsi is a cola. But I drink Coca-Cola because I like the flavor of Coca-Cola. And that's, they realized then that they weren't in a competition. That's where they separated themselves effectively into a separate subcategory, which made them the choice for the new generation.
Yeah.
You know, it was saying, well, we're two colas, but we're a real cola as opposed to the other guys.
Do you know who was rumoured to have famously failed the Pepsi challenge?
No, who? Ronald McDonald?
Well, I might be wrong here again, because this is all from my stuff I've read in the past, and I have a shocking memory for remembering things incorrectly sometimes. But I think it was John Sculley, who was the president of Pepsi Cola for a few years, and it was at one time the president of Apple, actually. But anyway, he was rumoured to have failed at the Pepsi Taste Challenge and chosen Coca-Cola instead, which was a bit embarrassing for their marketing campaign. But anyway.
Yeah. But, you know, realistically, you know what? If you've never done the Taste Challenge, go and do it. It's really quite weird to do. So you need someone to help you with it. But Pepsi tastes like a cola. It's actually what cola tastes like. Coca-Cola tastes like Coca-Cola. And it's an excellent example of, you know, don't try and beat Coca-Cola at its own game, because it's running its own game. You know, it makes the rules, it defines the market. You know, if you find yourself in that sort of situation, that's where you need to get on another ladder. You know, make another category. So if you're sitting out there as a budding soft drink developer, and think about how this has played out over the last few years. Why all of a sudden were there lots of mineral waters? Why is there Fanta, and why is there, you know, the lemon squash based flavors and ginger ale, and, you know, they're known as the flavors. They're all on separate ladders. You know, they're not trying to compete with Coca-Cola, because even if they have their best year, they are never going to sell anywhere near what Coca-Cola sells for its cola product. It is a category that it's in all by itself. Someone told me once about Coca-Cola that if they can get a child under 10 to drink their product three times, they will own them for life.
Yeah. Yep, indeed.
You know, and that's what that branding is all about. It's just about, you know, it's made Coca-Cola the word that people say when they want a drink. I believe Coca-Cola determines anyone to be opposition to them if it goes in their mouth. So if you're a meat pie, you're in opposition to Coca-Cola. You know, if you're pizza, you're in opposition to Coca-Cola, because the money that they're spending on buying the pizza, they're not spending on buying Coca-Cola.
Yeah, absolutely. And I mean, you probably go down the same route here. I've never smoked, but, you know, cigarettes and the different brands of cigarettes, you know, and they're competing for you in mind and segment and the different aspects. They're all going on, competing against each other on different segments of the market. Some are number one for this market, some are number two for that market. They're aiming at young people. They're aiming at, you know, whatever their segment is, they're trying to get to be number one in a particular segment. They may not be number one in all segments. So the number one cigarette might be a high tar cigarette, for example. So, you know, you're going to be number one in the low tar cigarette segment and stuff like that. So,
and you know what? That leads you to the law of division, because the law of division says that it doesn't matter what category you're in. So if you started out with cigarettes and then all of a sudden you've got low tar and high tar, and, you know, then there's menthol and everything as well. I too, you can tell, I'm not a cigarette smoker. Is that every category will divide and become multiple categories as, you know, the market itself develops. You know, a really good example, David, computers.
Yep.
When I was first going to school and computers became a thing that was available to everybody, you know, not just, you know, in big companies, all of a sudden there was this thing called a desktop computer. But from then there was laptop computers, and then there were notebook computers, and then all of a sudden, you know, there are now tablets, and, you know, it just keeps dividing and dividing and dividing. Why? Because if you don't divide, eventually everyone's going to have a computer. And what are you going to sell them then? You've got to wait for it to break. No, no, you just create a second product category so that you can sell them more things. You know, Apple's just launched their iPhone 6, comes in two sizes.
Yeah.
You know, so now there's this sort of...
the phablet, yeah.
Phablet category, and then there's the phone category. So, you know, the market divides itself. I think this is because people basically are tribal. You know, we all have these tribes that we follow. You have a favorite radio station. You know, you've got runners. You know, think about Nike and Reebok. You know, they're little tribes all of their own. It's all tribal in the way that we think. We really haven't come a long way.
No, I get where you're coming out on that one. Yeah, all sorts of division of categories to that you can follow. You know, the same sort of thing happens with cars. You know, if there was one car from the outset, you know, Henry Ford, you know, with his Model T Ford, you know, one car was going to become dominant. And perhaps it set the pace. But, you know, then people actually, some people say, well, actually, you know, I want a fast car. I want a bigger car. I want a family car. I want an estate car. You know, you get all these different segments. And I think you have Toyota in Japan, you know, when they decided to create an upmarket brand for attacking the American market, they created Lexus, which stands for luxury export to the US. That's how the origin of the Lexus name came around. You know, they were probably never going to succeed in that exclusive market or the more upmarket side of things with the name Toyota. So they created a category. You know, so what, well, they chased the category with a different name. You know, they realized that there's a category that they couldn't compete with on that name. So that's where they went with that one.
Now, look, I hesitate to say this, David, but we are out of time and we are nowhere near covering it. So we might have to come back because we haven't even touched on some of my favorite laws, which are really easy for people in small to medium business to use. So what do you think? Come back, do it again next week?
I think we've got part two next week on this. In the meantime, of course, anybody might like to actually go and find the book. You know, it's a good one.
Fabulous book.
Follow up on this one. So The 22 Immutable Laws of Marketing by Al Ries, that's R-I-E-S, and Jack Trout. Good book. And I'm going to dig, I'm going to go through it. Well, dig my copy out. I'm going to go through it properly again. It's a good book. Well worth going through. David, anything you want to add before we do the wrap up?
You know, as David said, get a copy of the book, you know, read it online, listen to the audio book, however you like to consume it. It is must listen to for people who are in business to get your brain around how you can best use the marketing in your business. You know, it'll save you money. It will genuinely save you money.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, find us, of course, follow us on facebook.com/David versus David. Check out more episodes at the website, www.davidversusdavid.com. And, of course, visit iTunes. Leave us another glowing 5-star review, please. All appreciated. No, seriously, though, send us all your comments. Leave us reviews. Tick the boxes for us. We'll keep doing this as long as people keep listening. And we've got lots of people listening. It's really nice to see. Thank you to everybody that's liked the Facebook page over the weeks and left us reviews. And as always, we welcome your comments. So send them through any which way you want. But yeah, from me here in the UK, it's going to be over and out.
And from me here in beautiful paradise, Tasmania, it's goodbye. Catch you next week.
Indeed. Take care.
You have just been listening to the David versus David podcast with David Pritchard and David Council, helping you get knockout results with your online marketing and advertising. Please keep in mind that the ideas, opinions, and information shared in the show are those of the hosts and do not reflect those of their past employers.